Welcome to Character Explorations, a podcast production of the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque. I'm Annalee Ward, the director of the Wendt Center, and our guest today is Dr. Josh Thomas, Associate Professor of Exercise Science. He's the author of the article Healing a Fractured World, and this article is available online at dbq.edu/WENDT. That's dbq.edu/Wendt. Welcome, Josh. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
You have been part of the team that's written articles for the issue Character and Crisis. Well, what got you thinking about the fractures in our culture, this experience that I think everybody recognizes but hasn't necessarily named as a crisis? What got you thinking about these fractures in terms of crisis?
I think coming from my background, there's kind of a meeting of both the understanding that we see a lot of division, we see a lot of stress and things like that over different topics and different issues today, combined with my exercise and wellness background and seeing students who are dealing with a lot of different stresses, seeing adults who are dealing with a lot of different stresses, and kind of starting to see a way where those two may be connected, and hearing students talk about how this issue creates stress for them, or seeing people on social media post about the stresses they're feeling dealing with seeing these things in the news or seeing these things in the real world.
Thanks. Is there perhaps an example that illustrates this for you?
Well, one example that I came across, which I think highlights just in some ways the absurdity of it, is an example from the world of sports where you had two fans. Well, it was a group of people watching a football game, watching an Alabama-Texas A&M football game. Close game. People are talking like they always do. But as the game ended, it became a more vigorous argument, I guess you'd say. And the owner of the house was like, hey, you guys need to take this outside. They went outside. It escalated more. And eventually one of them shot the other. Ugh. And they ended up dying in a hospital later. So you have a simple sports argument ending in somebody's death. Now think about many issues that are much, much bigger than just your favorite sports team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Crisis indeed. One of the things that you have said, let me quote you, if I might. Media amplification of extreme views, compounded by our own biases and the lack of good leadership, results in misperceptions and mistrust of the other. I'd really like to unpack this a bit. Media amplification in marketing is often referred to as a positive strategy, but here you suggest something else is going on. What is happening with the media in terms of these divisions and fractures?
I think the media plays a big role, both in an intentional sort of way, but also just as the source of our information. So I think there's definitely times where the media amplifies things in a way to get a certain response. You know, we're in a culture where we are very quick to see, I need to know something right away. I don't want to take the time to dig into nuance. So we need something that grabs attention. So a clickbait headline, a soundbite that is inflammatory. And so, you know, media outlets use that as a way to get ratings, to get people to pay attention to their shows or go to their pages or whatever. Unfortunately, because we are such a quick consumer society, a lot of people don't get past the soundbite or the headline, and so that's all they know. They don't know the nuance or the additional context of what was said. And I think that's where the maybe the indirect or unintentional part of how we get our media and how we consume our media comes into play, because we are so quick to see little bits, or we see a tweet online, or we see a post on Facebook, and we react to that without bothering to read the full article or see some of the other things that may have influenced it. Like, this headline proves my point, therefore I'm right, you're wrong, end of story type of thing.
So you mentioned that our own biases and interpretations impact these issues. Do you want to say anything more about that?
Definitely. I think we all understand that we have bias. I think the hard part is how many of us are more maybe cognizant of it or thinking about our bias when we go into arguments, and where it's more kind of behind the scenes. So there are many forms of bias. A couple that I thought are fairly relevant in our discussion about division is the idea of confirmation bias, where, you know, if we believe something or if we hold a certain position, it's natural that we are going to favor evidence that supports that position and tend to ignore evidence that works against it, you know. And the challenge would be to move past that and say, well, what do I think about evidence on the other side? Does it have some valid points? Doesn't mean that it's going to change my position, but I can at least understand the other side of it versus just saying, well, it doesn't fit my narrative per se. Desirability bias is another one that I think is interesting, in that basically if we want something to be true, we tend to believe it regardless of if there is any evidence. It's just, well, I believe this, therefore it must be true. You know, you hear a news story, I use an example of pro sports, you know, you hear a negative story about an athlete, if they're on your team, you're probably like, oh no, they didn't really do it, it's overblown. If they're on an opposing team or a rival team, you're like, oh yeah, they definitely did it, they're guilty. And we don't even know any of the evidence yet, we're just kind of, you know, seeing that. There's a particular case right now with the Cleveland Browns where you see a lot of people defending the athlete because, well, people are making up stories about him, and then other people are like, well, there's this many stories, he's obviously guilty, and we still don't really know what completely happened, but it's been very interesting to see how that comes into play. And then we also have the idea of binary bias, just we frame so many arguments as there are only two sides. It's this side or this side, and you have to pick a side. There's nothing in between, where a lot of things are in that gray area. Like, there is more than just the two sides, and it becomes very difficult to have a discussion if it's just, I'm on this side, you're on that side, and if you're on that side, you're obviously wrong because I'm on this side, and we have no discussion.
In the context of the media, nuance is not something that's allowed for.
Right.
And then we have the added dimension of algorithms that continue to feed one particular view or another.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I found interesting in my research on this was an article that talked about from Hidden Tribes that referred to a group they called the Exhausted Majority. And I kind of resonated with that because I would probably put myself in that category. And the reason they were talking about the exhaustive majority is they were trying to highlight the fact that the things that we tend to see, the loud voices, the talking heads, if you want to use that example, don't always represent the majority viewpoint. They represent a somewhat polarized viewpoint to continue to get people riled up and talking and feeding into, you know, media clicks and whatnot. And this exhaustive majority was interesting because there were four things they said that were kind of key points to this group, which was they were tired of the polarization, the A or B type of argument. They're often forgotten because they're the quieter voices. They're not going to speak up because they don't want to jump into the I'm going to get attacked for this viewpoint. They tend to be more flexible, so that kind of goes along with the polarization aspect. They're not, it's either this or this. They're, you know, usually somewhere in the middle. And then they still kind of believe that there is a common ground. And that doesn't mean that we're all going to throw our hands up and say, hey, it's all over, everybody's happy, we all agree on everything, because that's not reality. But finding a way to disagree but still work as a cohesive society.
It sounds like we would benefit from having someone or some people step forward in leadership to help bring out that common ground. You do discuss in here that lack of leadership is a real problem and a contributor to this growing fracture. Mm-hmm. In how so?
I kind of see leadership similar to what I mentioned with the media amplification. I feel like there's kind of two factors to it. There is one, leadership that has maybe changed, maybe not, maybe it's just the way it's presented, but leadership that's gone away from a strong leadership, this is where we all need to come together, to how do I attract my base? You know, here's what I need to do to get more people following me, and I know if I say this or if I bring up this argument, people are going to jump on this and follow me just because I use this phrase or I use this term. And it's more about almost creating polarization, creating an opponent that we can then attack to get people to agree if they don't like that person either. So certainly not a great aspect there.
An opportunity for character to definitely be expressed.
Definitely. I think we could certainly see more of that. I can think of several examples I've seen in the past week or two on social media where people are obviously just trying to get people mad because they know that's going to appeal to a certain base that follows them, and just kind of makes me shake my head. But again, I'm not going to be the one to jump into the argument either, because I know I'm going to kind of get in that, and I don't tend to like to do that on social media. The other part of leadership, I think, that's a challenge is when you do have leaders who are trying to do it the right way, who knows how the people that are following them are going to respond? Because there's a lot of people who have moved away from, well, I trust my leaders, to I trust my leader as long as I agree with my leader. And once my leader says something I don't agree with, now I don't value their opinion anymore. It doesn't matter what they say. I don't want to be challenged in my view because I know I'm right. And that becomes very difficult because some of the institutions that we used to think about, you know, colleges and churches, universities, doctors, all these people who are the trusted sources are now, I only trust you as long as I agree. And that becomes very tough to work against.
I'll say. Yeah. Wow. Well, so far we continue to talk about fracture, and I do want to move to hope. But before we do, you do highlight how the divisiveness exacerbates fears. And I thought maybe you'd like to say a few things about where and how you see fear at work in this fractured world.
Certainly. And fear ties into my world a little bit when you think about physiology and response to stresses, when you think about the fight or flight response. It's an ingrained response that we have that kind of gets us ready for dangerous or emergency situations, which normally we think of as like life-threatening situations. This is what happens when there's an accident or a crash or something traumatic like that. But now we're seeing that because there's elevated stresses in other areas, that there's kind of this constant level of worry and stress, and I should be afraid of this. Both just because there are scary things out there. You know, I'm a parent of four kids, and I can think of a lot of scary things that they're going to have to deal with. But then it also, as we mentioned with the idea of biases and amplification and leadership, that fear then also can kind of be used as a tool to create greater division. Because if I make you afraid of something and I convince you that I'm the solution to your problem, well, there you go. You're going to follow me regardless of whether or not I'm actually, you know, anything truthful or not. I've just made you afraid of things. And the more we're afraid of it, the more we get stressed, the more division we get, the more we hear about that division, and it just kind of seems to continue to build and become more and more of a stressor issue.
Josh, this essay speaks about healing. We need to turn our conversation here to your suggestions that help us move forward with hope, but they're also very practical ways to start bringing some healing. Help us to think through this.
Yeah, I think it certainly can feel like a challenge. I know at times writing the paper, it can feel a little not depressing, but it's like, man, here's another rough story, here's another rough story, here's another rough example. So where do we go from here? And I think the challenge is just to really change our viewpoint, to get away from the somebody that disagrees with me is automatically a bad person, to say we may disagree on this, but you're still a human being. You still have value. You know, we need to get back to that. I talk a little bit about community, and I think I like that word, the idea of community, because community says we're not all the same. We don't all share the same beliefs. We don't all agree on everything. But as a community, we are together in this. And so, you know, you think about a strong community, you know, civility. I mean, civility seems like a simple thing, but it's really hard. At least it feels that way with especially media amplification, social media. I feel like that's an area where we don't see a lot of civility. We see people just attacking for various reasons. And so I do see people online trying to kind of hit in that middle and say, well, you know, not all of us who are on this side may be attacking like this. We're trying to do this. And they're trying to, you know, have good discussions. Say, I disagree with you on this for this reason. What do you think about this? And it's really interesting to see people like, oh, wow, like, hey, you're disagreeing with me, but you're being nice about it. You can do that? Like, that surprises people sometimes. But the fact that we can have a discussion that's not about attacking the other person, but it's about a real discussion of the issues. Because without discussion, we don't get anywhere. If we just, nobody attacks somebody into agreeing with their point, you know?
So developing good communication skills like
active listening. Yeah, active listening would
like
be a good one.
Describing.
Yes, definitely actually listening to the person, listening to what they want to say, being able to reframe what they said to make sure that you understood that, because that's an area I see a lot of challenges. People assume, well, you're on this side, so this is what you said, when it's not. And so having that ability to say, what did you say? Here's what I heard. Does that represent what you said? And then being able to say, well, based on that, here's what I think, furthers that dialogue. And again, like you said, communication is a big part of that. Just trying to understand what we want to do. You think about communities having shared interests. Again, even though they're not always going towards the same agreement, there's at least that idea of a common good, which feels like it's harder and harder to find anymore because we don't agree. And now we feel like we don't agree, then, well, if I don't agree on this, then I can't agree with you on anything else. So.
Yeah, so reaffirming our common values, I really appreciate that. This common humanity, but the common values we have, we care about our friends and our family. We all do. It doesn't matter what our divisions are. We want to start to build that common ground. So that's another great suggestion. Thank you.
I think some of the other things that we go into, you know, I think about community, I think about family, because family is a community. And, you know, you always hear the story about the families who have that relative that's always going to say something a little bit off, but they're still part of our family. You know, we might not agree or encourage maybe what they say, but that doesn't, we're not, you know, excommunicating them or anything like that. I think some of the other things we can do, just keeping our character in, is thinking about what we're hearing, thinking about where we're hearing it from, realizing that some of the people that represent certain views might be the might not be the majority representation. They may just be the loudest representation in some points. Yeah. I really liked, as I was researching, a book I read by Adam Grant called Think Again, and it really challenges us to think again about our positions. And I really liked how he framed mindsets he talked about when discussing. He talks about the preacher mindset, he talks about the prosecutor mindset, and the politician mindset, and then the scientist mindset. And he talks about the preacher basically is identifying, this is what I believe and I'm going to promote my ideas. And the prosecutor is basically, I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with your side. And then the politician is basically, what do I need to say to get people to believe me? And he says, we all have these flaws from time to time because we all are invested in our ideas, you know. But he challenges people to think like a scientist and to say, it's not about winning people. It's not about proving others wrong. It's about understanding the issue more. And that requires you to ask questions of the other side, to understand what are the various viewpoints. And there's typically more than two, as we said. And to really say, where can we find a solution? It might not be a solution everybody agrees on, but we can at least start to think that way versus the idea of winning an argument, I guess I would say.
Terrific. Good suggestions about community, communication, reflection. All of these kinds of suggestions are so helpful to us and good reminders. I think many times we know these things, but we need to be reminded of the civility with which we would like to live our lives, for example. So I want to thank you for both the diagnosis that you have provided here and the suggested medicine to heal from these fractures that are causing us so much distress. But I'd also like to give you the opportunity, is there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
I think the reason I framed this paper as the idea of fracture and healing comes from my background as an exercise scientist. My PhD research looked a little bit about bone stress and running because that's my background. And so naturally I thought of stress is a positive, but it's also a negative. Our body needs stress to adapt, and that makes us stronger as long as the stress doesn't become so great that it creates fracture. And that can happen from very big acute things, and it can come from small repeated things. And so as we look at this from the idea of stress, disagreement is not a bad thing. We're not looking for a society where everybody agrees on everything. But what we're looking for is, where can stress create strength and not fracture? So where can we have disagreement, but in a good way? Where can we have positive discussion about issues? Where can we try and find agreement, even though we know that there's going to be times where it's just not going to happen? There are certain issues where it's just going to be separated. But what does that separation look like? And understanding that the idea is that we are trying to find a way through this together, and maybe challenging people to say, what does that look like for you? You know, maybe we can't fix this for everybody at once, but one person here, two people here, and as this idea grows, the idea of a challenge to be more, don't necessarily want to say be more positive because I feel like that can be kind of fluffy sometimes, but the idea of being realistic to say, I still hold for my values, but what does this look like as I interact with my friends, my neighbors, my coworkers, people I don't know on social media, you know, and trying to challenge us to be stronger in a way that makes our society better.
Thank you for that. Our guest today has been Dr. Josh Thomas, Associate Professor of Exercise Science, and I'm Annalee Ward for Character Explorations from the Wendt Center for Character Education at the University of Dubuque.